Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon.
All right, welcome back to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. We're here at No Studios and sponsored by SEIU, a rally that is going to be taking place this evening at the time of the Republican debate. I'm so happy to have my special guest every Wednesday, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Hey, good morning to you, Dr. Craig. How you doing?
Good morning, Earl. Happy debate day.
Yeah. I'm really excited, Dr. Craig, about SEIU, about unions and their role. It's part of, and I tell people this story a lot, Dr. Craig, as a young man, with starry eyes walking into a plant like A.O. Smith and not realizing that I wouldn't walk out again free until 34 years later. But what made it all possible and what made it all worthwhile is that we were able to make a wage that was comparable with anyone with a master's degree at that time, and receive benefits and vacations. And in the end, I had 6 weeks of vacation. I had weeks, three days off for Thanksgiving, Christmas and all those different things, a pension, Dr. Craig, that helps me tremendously as I've aged, and all of those different things, Dr. Craig, that were derived by unions. Why is it so difficult now as unions are working to try to bring some of those things back, Dr. Craig? Why are we having such a difficult time?
Well, the post-war period after the New Deal had all sorts of issues as well, all sorts of equality and race issues. As we know, you were getting civil rights, but not full economic equality. But there were things that it did much better. Coming out of the Great Depression and during it with the great labor law reforms and then through World War II, a decision was made that you could not rely upon large corporations to do the right thing for people because they are about their own profits, period. It's only our democracy that can think about the average person and the common good. And that we can, when we have effective Democrat government, that's what it does. It enabled working people to win major fights to form unions. It didn't just create unions, right? It simply created the conditions where people had a fair chance to create unions. And all of it, we're a great manufacturing country. Milwaukee was a great manufacturing center. And that sector was largely organized. And those used to be terrible jobs. They used to be jobs that killed you at a high rate. And they made good jobs when you empowered workers. But little did you know, entering and doing all of that, Earl, and having that great career in manufacturing, that the elites of this country, that the business elites, were thinking about how not to share as much of the pie with working people, and how to get from under that, how to outsource and find cheap labor overseas, how to destroy unions. And a false bill of goods was sold in the 70s, and then in the quote-unquote Reagan Revolution, where that would create more prosperity and they would take care of us. And look at the results. It used to be that a worker didn't need to have an advanced degree in order to join the middle class. And you experienced that yourself. And and so many other people still around on the north side of Milwaukee did, and they remember what was lost. We can recreate that if we invest in an economy, a high road union economy, and do the things we need done, like the climate transition to prevent a climate disaster, runaway climate change, healthcare, home care, child care. You know, there's a new report that says that 30 million people between now and 2030 will lose their jobs because of automation, and they're disproportionately women and people of color. There needs to be a plan for that, or it's going to make the pain worse, because there's no corporate boardroom that's trying to figure that out. As long as they have high profit margins, they don't care what happens to the workers. It's cheaper. You don't have to pay, you know, artificial intelligence, software, and computers if they can do the job instead of human beings. And so I know SEIU is part of building that, and that's why they're holding this rally and protest outside of a debate between people who do not share this value and want more of the same, if not worse. Also, no democracy, most of them.
You know, Dr. Craig, you talked about the debate that's going to be taking place this afternoon and early evening, and there's not one person that will be on that stage that will push back against any of the things that you just talked about, and that will benefit the average person. It's almost as if, even if they believed that what you were saying is true, they can't get elected if they're willing to speak that truth.
No, if you choose that side of the party, I mean, that party right now, there's no one. There used to be people in that party. There used to be progressives and pro-labor people within both parties. That's no longer the case. And the question in this debate is, there might be 2.5 of them by my estimation, that will say that the 2020 election was fairly lost by Donald Trump, and that he attempted to overturn constitutional democracy and to keep his seat illegally, the first president ever not to peacefully and amicably and cooperatively hand over power to his successor. And the two will be Asa Hutchinson, Chris Christie, and I would say half Pence. At least Mike Pence will acknowledge that he didn't have the authority to overturn the election, but then he defends the rest of Trump and also cast doubt about the investigation into him. I mean, they're clearly what Pence has described himself are crimes and a form of insurrection and subversion. The others will avoid that altogether, or in the case of their rising star on the stage, Vivek Ramaswamy, actually defend it because he wants to be Trump's vice president, is my guess. Go ahead.
No. Finish your point, Dr. Gray.
I was going to say, they certainly aren't going to talk about issues that affect average people. See if they talk about climate change, which is pretty darn obvious this summer. And that's why President Biden is out in Maui with the disastrous wildfire that took place there. Will they talk about rising health care costs? They continue to escalate to the extent that most insured people in Wisconsin are skipping health care because they don't think they can afford it. Tend to the co-pays and deductibles and surprise medical bills, even when they pay a king's ransom to have insurance or do so through their job where their salary is much lower because of the cost of insurance, of health insurance to their employer. They may talk about inflation, but they'll just blame Biden. It'll just be political. They won't have any viable solutions. They won't have an economic policy that makes any sense for average people. They certainly won't talk about all the jobs that are going to be lost to artificial intelligence and how we need to actually use government policy to plan an economy that can employ everyone, guarantee everyone a good job who wants one. They'll mention none of those, in my opinion, and they will all duck, most of them, except for the ones who were unviable, frankly, will totally duck on Donald Trump, which means they're not running against Donald Trump in any meaningful way. They're just hoping he'll have a health shock, or maybe one of the prosecutions will take him out of commission, or maybe the latest that's on the table, Earl, that the 14th Amendment actually requires that he not be on the ballot because he tried to overturn the government. It doesn't require him to be convicted of a crime. It's straight out in the 14th Amendment.
Well, you know, Dr. Craig, you can't expect anything of substance from any of them. And so, you know, it's nothing going to be nothing more than public theater. You know, Donald Trump, clearly these people who are, you know, rating 1%, 2%, have nothing to lose. You would think that they would at least unload everything it is they have and try to separate themselves from the others. But that's just it. They're all vanilla. They can't separate themselves because the message that they have is universal as it relates to, you know, what conservatism is today. So they're not going to say anything negative about Donald Trump outside of Chris Christie. They're not going to say anything different than what you hear from Ron DeSantis. You know, so What is the purpose then, Dr. Craig? Not eight people on the stage who are all going to be basically parroting the same thing. To me, just a public theater and nothing more.
Well, it's certainly not the Lincoln-Douglas debate or anything at that level. And you look at the media coverage. The media is complicit in this, the mainstream media. They're just covering it as a horse race. So it's just about positioning. And their big questions are, you know, Chris Christie is credited with destroying Marco Rubio's candidacy by humiliating him on the debate stage, showing that he was reading just canned lines over and over again, which he was. And so will he take Ron DeSantis out? Right. So that's their concern. Who is legitimate?
Say, Dr. Craig, I got to get you to hold the thought. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show at No Studios, supported by SEIU. We'll be right back.
Entertained and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. An excessive heat warning begins at 10 a.m. this morning and continues until 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon with highs around 98. Southwest winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly clear skies tonight, lows level off around 74. Tomorrow, highs level off around 95. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 81 degrees.
Whether you're
outstanding, girl, you knock me up. Exciting.
Back to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show at No Studios, sponsored by SEIU, and on the line is my guest every Wednesday, Dr. Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Hey, Dr. Craig, you know, this battle, and I guess they call this the kickoff of the 2024 presidential election. your thoughts, Dr. Craig, on, you know, if there's anything that's going to be garnered from this debate this evening, other than, as you stated, public theater?
Well, it may determine who is the viable alternative to Donald Trump should he crash and burn, and that matters a lot. So, excuse me, I would say if they take Ron DeSantis out, that would matter. I'm very concerned still that even Trump, as dangerous he is, was not to be their candidate, that we might get a more plausible version that's even more dangerous, right? That is, Donald Trump would have been in much better shape if he had not tried to overturn the election and just set up to challenge Biden in 24, right? But he couldn't help himself. So he is a brilliant propagandist, but he has his limits. I guess if Trump was to win, this will help determine who's going to be in his cabinet, because he has decided this time he's not going to have anyone in his administration at the top levels that won't carry out his orders, which makes his the possibility of him winning even more dangerous. I think another thing to look at, Earl, other than all of that, is how they look as how this party looks as a party that could even win a national election. Because as dangerous and as much as we have to worry about the possibility of Trump winning and it being the end of American democracy, we move into a middle phase, which political scientists call democratic autocracy. There'd be elections, but they wouldn't matter. They'd be manipulated, just like our state legislative elections in Wisconsin with the worst gerrymander in the country. I also think there's another possibility where this is a landslide on the level of Lyndon Baines Johnson against the reactionary GOP candidate Barry Goldwater, and we have a chance to implement the whole Biden agenda and more, Earl. So this could help us assess that. I do think our base needs to be motivated to turn out for that to happen, and they're not clearly motivated now. So I also think it matters, Earl, because let's face it, we know why they're in Milwaukee, because Wisconsin's one of the handful of states that determines who wins national elections because of our archaic electoral college system and because this is such a closely balanced state. And so thinking of it that way and what this means for Wisconsin and 2024 matters. But we will not hear any great debaters. We will not hear any great statesmanly and stateswomanly discussions of public policy and the future of the country at all. It'll in a way, this debate will be a reflection of the degradation of American democracy and its current low state that needs to be we need to recover from and rebuild from.
You know, Dr. Craig, I will be watching it as well. I don't expect anything. If there was one person that you think can come out of this who would elevate their chances, who would it be?
Well, it's sort of odd because he was a totally unknown before, but this Vivek Ramaswamy character is doing very well out in the hustings in Iowa. And if you watch him, he is extreme. He is very extreme, and he's very glib, and he's very sure of these positions. And he does provide the reason I think Trump might want him for vice president. He creates plausible sense of diversity as an Asian American person, South Asian, I think, and so. Whether that's really true and whether this is Trump's vice president, let's face it, as much as Trump and the Republicans in Fox News want to demagogue about how old Joe Biden is, Donald Trump is not only almost as old, his health, the biggest effect on someone's longevity is their lifestyle. His lifestyle is notoriously unhealthy.
Well,
so
there's
that
matters
who the VP is.
You know, Dr. Craig, there's no question about that. I will say this. Certainly Chris Christie what many of us was looking for, to him having an opportunity to dismantle Donald Trump. I think without Donald Trump there, to kind of steal some of the thunder of Chris Christie and kind of disarms him.
Yeah, I guess he can get Ron DeSantis notch on his belt, some people are predicting. I think Ron DeSantis might be the guy. It doesn't look like he's the effective politician propagandist that is that dangerous. But as far as how he's governed Florida and what he wants to do, he's a very dangerous man himself. So I don't think it's a bad thing if he is.
Media.us to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that.
Welcome back to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. We are at beautiful No Studios with a special program, sponsored by SEIU. And I am joined by a good friend from a different time, Miss Christine Newman Ortiz. Good morning to you. She is the executive director still of Voices de la Frontera.
Oh, well, Earl, thank you so much for having me. And I know you're going to introduce Daisy,
yeah.
but I just want to say it's a real pleasure to be here. And thank you for your leadership and being such an important voice as well. And important community dialogue.
Yeah,
Thank you. It's
good to see you. You're still around, still in the battle. And you brought a young lady, Miss Daisy Espana, to join us. Good morning to you, Daisy. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having us.
All right. So tell us a little bit about Daisy.
Well, Daisy, I'll just maybe introduce her by saying that I was so impressed by Daisy because she, her family's here and she'll, go deeper on this. But what impressed me so much is that early on, her interest in politics and all that obviously is personal and she can share about that. But when she moved to go to school in Iowa, she would drive from Iowa to Milwaukee to participate in all of the big marches that were happening. That's like her dedication to the struggle. And now she's back here in Milwaukee, and which is awesome.
So tell us a little bit about Daisy Espana.
I am 21. My parents are undocumented. They moved from Mexico over 23 years ago, I believe. And so I guess their story kind of pushed me to start being like an activist or a community organizer. And a few years ago, I started getting more involved with Voices. And how Christine mentioned, I was attending school in Iowa, but I was very different, so I would drive.
No kidding.
I would drive. It would be like a 6.5 hour drive there and back, and so I would make the drive every time they had an event or a demonstration. And I moved back like 2 years ago maybe, and I've been organizing ever since, especially young people to get involved and head to the polls.
So Christina, you've been at this a while, and the teammates are getting younger and younger. Tell us a little bit about why that's so important, and that they certainly have a lot more energy than well, I speak for myself than I have. But that's. That's at the crux of it. It has to be. This battle really is for them, because it's their time now.
Yeah, I mean, I strongly feel that our strength is multi-generational, and we all have something at stake.
Right.
And one of my favorite quotes is Martin Luther King, who said, if you can't, what is it? If you can't run, walk. If you can't. move. And I feel like, and there's so much wisdom that comes with age and a different set of needs and experiences. And So I love it all. However, having said that, you bet it has to be multi-generational, and especially for the youth, because we all have to leave this world at some time. And I think in Wisconsin, what's powerful is not just that that's just the reality of the seasons, you know, of our, but also it's strategic because, for example, I mean, I know you've interviewed different people, so maybe we can share with you our kind of slice of life right. as it relates to Latinos in Wisconsin, but and youth in general, because we also organize multiracial youth through Youth Empowered in the Struggle. But, for example, looking at Latino youth in 2020, 18,000 in Wisconsin became eligible to vote for the first time. And we know the margins between, you know, for important presidential elections or statewide elections.
18,000 could swing the presidential election.
Yeah, and 11,000 of them, are like Daisy, who are the children of undocumented parents. So you bet they have a stake in the elections. I mean, all of us do. But when you have parties who are running hard against you and your family and really cruel policies, you know, it's our duty to get involved and organize others.
So this, I notice this. Yeah, well, I don't know it for a fact, but I keep listening to conservatives saying that Latinos are swinging more towards conservatives, and I just could never fathom that, considering what they do to people down at the border.
You know, that's just a mainstream false narrative. It really got picked up after the last presidential elections because they focused on Florida
right.
and Texas border.
Well,
so and then they generalized from there. And like when we think about it strategically again, like there's a couple of states that really matter. But in general, it is true that, the vast majority of Latinos reject the kind of party platform that Republicans are running on. That's not to say that they're not disappointed and demand more from the people they do help elect. And that's a key part, too. It's so important for us as an organization. I think that's true for all of us who are involved in electoral politics, you know, who see it as important. But, you know, for example, in Wisconsin, 70% of Latinos voted for Biden over Trump, you know. And so it's and it's ever-growing voting block. So it's one that requires a lot of engagement. I would say some of the, so it's around, you know, it's, I think it is higher than it should be. You bet. I think it's higher than it should be, but it's still not, you know,
the fabrication that they're making it out.
Exactly.
So let me, Daisy, let me ask you, for those who are listening, who may not understand it, your parents are undocumented, immigrants. What does that mean?
They can't go back to Mexico to visit. They can't vote. They pretty much don't have a say in anything, but they do contribute to the economy, to society, and so it's kind of like a situation where they do all these, like they work through the pandemic, right?
Right.
They didn't get no stimulus.
They pay taxes.
Yep, they pay taxes, but they don't get any like. Rights, if you will, you know what I mean. Like they are unable to vote. That is why, like I can vote, my sister can vote, my cousins can vote. That's why it's very crucial.
So what are your thoughts about that? Your parents, seeing your parents doing all these things, working, being a part of the society, but not being totally accepted. You, on the other hand, and younger. And the siblings of those undocumented immigrants. What are your thoughts about how your parents and that whole thing works?
I believe that they should have a say in.
And they've been here how many years? They've been here how many years?
Over 23 years.
I mean, that to me just makes no sense whatsoever. Somebody who's been in this country for 23 years, who has not committed crimes, who is paying taxes and being a part of all of it. It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely scary. They're probably frightened every time they go out, right? Because they don't know if they'll return or if they get stopped or whatnot. But it's also the idea that they can't have a say in who gets elected and or anything else for that matter. And that's why I push like my family members who can vote and like friends and community members to not only vote for themselves, but vote for everyone who can.
Christina, the border issue, which has been an ongoing thing. Why can't they just get this fixed?
Well, right now, originally Biden did have a very good proposal when he was running as a candidate, which was, and it was something that was implemented and then it was starting to get rolled back under Trump, but was, you know, just to really do a more comprehensive investment in the root causes of forced migration, especially from Central America, where you have a large growth of cartels, you know, really in Mexico too, you know, deep entrenched. They call it like narco government because it's so institutionalized. And there's been a very powerful democratic grassroots movement, which doesn't get, you know, much attention here in the U.S., but that's been fighting for democracy. Like the most recent elections, you know, it was really more of a left candidate. And so you're really going over, you know, and again, things aren't going to change overnight. And then you have a strong independent labor movement. You know, you've even had the indigenous uprising in the southern Mexico. So you have a strong, you know, democratic movement. But the policies that the U.S. has historically implemented have really favored, you know, these large corporations that are upholding these dictatorships and then have contributed to poverty, forced migration. And then under Trump, he basically shut down the border. And unfortunately, it's been the movement that's been pressuring Biden to, like, for example, dismantle those policies. So it's, you know, part of it is we need a working legal systems is what we need. And that's what's missing, legal channels.
We also need the American people to be educated on our foreign policy, because we have created the movement in those nations. Our policies have added to why people are forced to leave. And I often say this on the air. What makes you think somebody would be willing to pull up their families and travel through the desert if things were right at home?
Absolutely.
And the things that we have done politically over decades in Central America is at the root of it. But yet nobody talks about our policies, the people we've backed, the people we've supported. All we talk about are the people at the border as if they somehow have committed crimes to, you know, in coming here.
Absolutely. And our hands are not clean.
No,
as the government.
They're not.
And it is so important that we do that, because I think in the U.S. there's so much is whitewashed. You know, there's an effort to really disconnect us from other people and other struggles. And we are so connected, you know, through commerce, through trade. So thank you for saying that, because I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, you know, when they're talking about not wanting to change and wanting to change history, you know, well, they don't often talk about this part of the history, which is as important as any in why these things are happening. And it's at the root of why those people are at the border. And Americans need understand that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you have the United States that was supporting, has supported in Central America, you know, during the 80s and even more recently, this very, you know, military dictatorships and supported movements to remove from power democratically elected governments that were elected on a platform of, you know, helping, you know, providing more for the people and limiting the benefits that large companies get, like Chiquita Company in Guatemala, you know, or in Mexico with the North American Free Trade Agreement that really was about bringing down environmental health and safety regulations, turning a blind eye to the kinds of labor violations that are going on, you know, and calling it a democracy when you know, for so long, especially under the pre, it wasn't.
You know, at the same time, when you talk about NAFTA and what it wrought, it took those middle class jobs out of America. So it was twofold. It took the middle class jobs out of America, destroyed the middle class, and then demonized and vilified Mexico, saying they took the jobs away from the America. I mean, we don't know our history. And so it's easy to point the finger at people from different nations. Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. I am joined by Miss Daisy Espana and Christine Newman Ortiz, who is with Voices de la Frontera. 844-967-2789, special edition. All right, welcome back to a special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. I'm so happy and excited that SEIU has sponsored this special edition of the Earl Ingram Show and brought in guests like Christine Newman Ortiz from Voces de la Frontera and young Miss Daisy Espana. Let me ask you, Miss Espana, when you look at what is taking place right now in this major debate, the elections are coming up, you're around a lot of other young people like yourself. Do you discuss politics at all? Is it a major issue in your life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I bring it up whenever I can, and I should bring it up more. But yeah, we need to start talking about it and not be uncomfortable to have those conversations with people.
You aspire to politics at any point in your life?
Oh, yeah, I want to run for office at one point.
Why?
I believe that we don't have enough representation of like who we are, like Mexican American, and with our like stories and history. So
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is nobody works harder than immigrants in this country. It's just the truth. And yet, even though they work as hard as they work, they still fight to get respect. After all these decades that you've been on the front line, Christina, in this battle, what do you want to say to people who don't see these people who work as hard as they work and who only want a fair opportunity for their families? That's the only reason anybody can come as far as people come. Mm-hmm. You know, what's on the Statue of Liberty, one of the things, giving your tithe, your poor, your huddled masses longing to be free. Those are more than words, right?
Absolutely. It's been, you know, that really is, I think, what we aspired to, you know, like that's what's so powerful about those words, because it's really what we aspired to that, and all these movements, you know, there's been a history of resistance and a long history of different groups, different waves of people who have, you know, aspired to make real the ideals of this country, and that's a powerful force. And our laws certainly don't reflect that, but it's been that ideal that has informed so much. So for immigrants who are coming, I think, and you know, in my like you said, why do they work so hard? Obviously, it's a necessity, and you know, the huge. I mean, they put their lives on the line to come here, and the vast majority of them are coming here to help their families, you know, and it's anything, it's what any one of us would do if the tables were turned, you know, if the tables were turned, and people do that, people leave when there isn't opportunity. So it's, and people have been here for decades, and I think we have to understand that people like the candidates who are going to be on the platform tonight, you know, or even you know, politicians that are on either side that are delaying immigration reform for millions of people who have been forced to work without, you know, legal status, who have been denied full, you know, rights to elect their representatives or have a voice in school government or any of this stuff. You know, that the reason is that for me, it's a labor issue, you know, that they are being denied their immigration status because it benefits, you know, the large employers that make a lot of money off that. And then you have politicians like the ones tonight that have passed, you know, promised to continue with Trump's, you know, big tax giveaway to the super rich because, you know, because it keeps one group of people down and it's a convenient scapegoat when people are looking to blame somebody for their hardships.
So let me ask you, Latinos are the number one minority now in this country. They've certainly overtaken the blacks in this country and are a growing, strong minority group. Do you think that there's been a change of the way the majority community looks at the Latino community based on now the fact that your numbers are where they are?
I remember back in when the first there was the big mass strikes and marches. I don't know if folks remember that. Earl, if you remember that in 2006.
Yeah,
I don't know how old you are, Daisy. But, you know, wow, you four?
Four.
So maybe you remember it. A lot of little kids remember it being pushed in strollers. But, you know, Milwaukee was the third city to go out in this mass wave of strikes and this policy that was going to do mass criminalization of them and their families and anyone who didn't know someone's status and didn't turn them into immigration authorities. And that really turned the tide. That turned the tide. And from there, it really birthed a modern immigrant rights movement. And I could, because up to that point, to say you were pro-immigrant, for most elected officials, it was like toxic, you know, or like, I don't want to stand next to this leper, you know. It was, and that turned the tide. And I think it's just like people came out so strongly, so proudly, showed their economic contributions,
right,
which brought the country to a standstill. And the next day, it was off the table.
I remember that.
It was off the table. And when Wisconsin here, we've done that over and over again. And I do believe that, you know, I think obviously we have, you know, ways to go, but there has been a greater solidarity, and I'll speak for here in Wisconsin. I am so grateful for the solidarity that we've shown and that has been shown to us, you know, by the black community, by the Asian community, you know, the larger progressive community. And it wasn't always there. It's been a process by labor unions, and it's been a process, and we're stronger now for it.
So, unfortunately, of time. Thank you very much for coming in and having spent some time with us, and as well, Mr. Spagna. And I want to thank especially SEIU for making all of this possible, and No Studios for certainly giving us an opportunity to be here. I'm going to be back here this evening from 3 to 7 as we really let our hair down. Those of us who have hair enough to let down and really be excited about it. But thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin, as always. Thank No Studios. Thank SEIU. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you all later.
Great show, Earl. See you.